how the various aspects of the law we find in Jesus' teaching, in other words, the applications of those things. And one of the thing we've been over the last couple of weeks looking at is in this is four different motivations, or four what are called motive clauses that are within the law of Moses. In other words, these are the reasons why that God had put into the law why people were to keep the law. Okay, and just real quickly by way of review of that before we move into the last section here is those four. Four motive clauses. The first one has to do with gratitude for what God has done. In other words, that God within the law told the Israelite people, this is how you are to treat various people, and the reason you're to treat them that way is because you remember that you were captives in Israel and you were in bondage and I brought you out of bondage. So therefore, because I did this for you and treated you this way, this is how you're to treat other people. So so the following the law or keeping the law should in part be based on remembering what God had done. Then there is the whole idea of imitation of what God is like. In other words, that it's saying that they are to be striving to be like God, to live like God, or to be holy and so forth. That the concept was within the law that said that they were to be like Yahweh and live in the ways of Yahweh rather than in the ways of other people and other nations and so on and so forth. The third one is that they were to be different. They were expected by the law to be a different kind of people. In other words, when you keep in mind the mission that they had, which was to, in fulfilling the promise that God had made to Abraham, they were to be the light for the rest of the world, and if they weren't any different than the rest of the world was, then why would people be attracted to Jehovah God if his own people weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing? So they were to be a different kind of people than the rest of the world, the rest of the nations. And then the fourth one was for our own good. In other words, realizing that, you know, God is the manufacturer. Remember, we talked about, you know, the manual that you get in your car. The manufacturer is the one that made it. They know what's best for it and how to keep track of it and keep care of it so that you get the best performance out of your vehicle. And God is the manufacturer of us. He's the creator, and he gave us his word, his law, that tells us how it is best for us to live so that we get the most good out of our lives, okay? So those are the motivations, generally speaking, that we find within the law that was the reason why people need to be keeping the law. And again, in that study, we're looking at Jesus applying those very same principles to the law of Christ for us today. Now, as we finish up this particular part of our study on looking at Jesus and the law, there's one more part here that we've got to look at, and that's what's called the law's scale of values. Okay? In other words, when we look at the law, there are some things that in when you look at all the laws and the way that they're given and all these things we've been talking about, there are three things that we're going to focus on that are the most important things to be considered in the law, okay? And that's, in other words, in what is the value of the law, and this law, is this law more important than that law, and so forth, okay? So we're going to look at this scale of values concerning the law itself. Now, Jesus, if you turn over to Matthew chapter 22, Jesus was asked the question, okay, of all the commandments that were given, which is the greatest? Okay? And that's the question that really addresses this very topic here. Okay? The law's scale of values. Which are the most important laws? You say? And how were these laws set up in terms of this value and so forth? And how do all these different laws fit into this scale of values? So when Jesus is asked this question, and again, you know, the teachers of the law, they come to him trying to trap him and test him, you know, because as far as they were concerned, the legal experts saw all the laws as equal. Okay? A law is a law is a law. That's how they saw it. And it didn't matter, you know, no one particular law carried any more weight than any other law as far as they were concerned. In the way that they kind of went about things and the way they presented the law and so forth. So for them, this would be a way to trap Jesus into trying to say that, that indeed there are some laws that are more significant and important than others. And then, okay, well, if that's true, Jesus, you know, what about these laws? Are they? It doesn't matter if you violate these laws then, if they're not as important as these. That's not the point. Okay? That's not the point. It has to do with when we understand the scale of values of the law, then it helps then in applying all the laws the way that they were intended to be implied, or applied rather, you see, rather than just this arbitrary, you know, throwing this out and that out and applying traditions and so on and so forth. So we have this conflict here between the teachers of the law and Jesus right away over the value of different laws. So Jesus, in answering this question, how does he approach it? Well, I think that he approaches it really from the standpoint of this scale of values and shows what are the most important laws. And in a sense, it's kind of like, you kind of start at the top, and here's the most important, and then we go down from there. But there is a general governing principle that Jesus expresses in his answer to this particular question. What is his answer that he gives to this? Of all the laws, what is the greatest or the most important law? And Jesus answers by saying what? Okay? Love the Lord your God, how? And with all your strength. Okay? Now, if you understand the things that we've been talking about, the law was given in the context of what? No. It was given in the context of a story. Remember, we said at the very beginning of this part of our study, the law is given in the context of a story, and that story is what? It's a story of redemption. God displaying his love for his creation. And so remember, at the beginning we said God gave them the law at what particular point? And this is very significant. Don't forget this. It was after he saved them, after he brought them out of bondage, okay? After God had done the redeeming work, after he had displayed his love for these people. Okay? So one of the basic foundations that we've been looking at with this is that God gave the law, and that law was intended to be their response to God's love. See? So therefore, when Jesus answers this question, of all the laws that are out there, and there were just oodles of laws, weren't there? And his answer is, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. In other words, with your total being. See? Then the first priority of the law is to return the love that God has shown to you. See? Because that's what the law is based on. Okay? It is based on God's love for His creation. And so in order to follow the law, and the most important law there is, comes back to that very same issue. He goes on, even though he wasn't asked this question, he goes on to explain further, the second greatest command is what? Love your neighbor as yourself. It's just like the first commandment, isn't it? You say? And how is it just like the first commandment? Because it involves love. You say? Love is a response. Okay? And again, we've been talking about this throughout, that John over and over again tells us, we love because He did what? He first loved us. You see, our love and obedience and following the law is based on God's love for us. It is not something that comes from us and is initiated by us. The law itself came as a response to God's love. You see, all of that was initiated by God, not by His creation. So therefore, the first and greatest commandment, and we look at this scale of values, has to do with a response to God's love. He puts this, basically puts the law itself in its entirety into its proper perspective with talking about these two commandments. The first two commandments, basically, from Jesus' perspective, are the hook in which all of the rest of the law hangs. Okay? In other words, if you don't love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and you don't love your neighbor as yourself, then you may as well forget about the rest of the laws. You can keep all of the the laws of cleanliness and all the sacrifices and all of everything else. You keep all the rest of those laws to the T. And it will be for nothing if you do not keep the first two. Because all of those other laws hang on these first two commandments. That's how Jesus is placing it to them. In other words, these two laws then are the scale by which the rest of the laws should be measured. Okay? They are measured against these two. Love the Lord your God with your whole being and love your neighbor as yourself. None of the rest of the law matters one bit if those two are not kept. Okay? Any thoughts or questions or comments on that at all so far? Sure. Which again goes back to those motive clauses, because it's through compassion that God dealt with them, right? You see how it's all interconnected. You can't separate these things, and that's how God intended for it to be. You see? Now, what happens from here is, when you look at Jesus' response to that question, and again, it's a vitally important question. I think that so often, we preach sermons on it, and we talk about it and so forth, But I don't know that we ever really have appreciated the significance of Jesus dealing with that topic. Okay? The answer is to that question. It's real easy for us to kind of go, well, yeah, of course, love God and love people, Well, Jesus kind of takes that and basically what it's doing is setting up this this scale of values, so to speak, that basically has three components to it. Okay? There are three things, in other words, that the law says are the most important. Okay? And they're in this particular order. All right. The first one is that God comes first. Okay? God comes first. If you get that out of order, then nothing is going to work the way it's supposed to work. God comes first. Go over to Exodus chapter 20, verses 3 through 7. Let me get somebody to read those for us, please.
You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them, nor I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children of the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments.
Okay. Do you realize what we just read here? What is this? First three commandments have to do with what? Our response to God. And those commandments say what? God comes first. You see? That in our lives, in following and keeping, because again, what does it all basically come back to? The law is based on what? A relationship. It's not based on rules and regulations. It's based on the relationship. And the most important person or being in the relationship is who? It's God. And if we forget that, you see, then we get ourselves in the wrong place, and what happens? Not only do we mess up, but now God is no longer king of our lives, we're king of our lives, you see? And so that's why even in the law, when God gave it to them, it was stressed to them, God says, I'm number one. Okay? God comes first, period. If anything else comes first, then things are not in the proper order. Okay? Now, go over to Luke chapter 14 and let's take a look at something that Jesus said that kind of, you know, echoes this same kind of sentiment. Okay? The same idea here. Luke chapter 14, verse 26. Let me get somebody to read that for us. Wow. That's kind of like really, really strict, isn't it? I mean, if I'm going to be a follower of Jesus, he wants me to hate my father and my mother and my brothers and sisters and even my own wife? What is his point here? What? God is first. Does Jesus literally saying he wants us to go and hate our parents and our brothers and sisters? No, that's not his point. When he uses this terminology, his point is he's got to come first. If anybody, whether it's our parents, our siblings, our friends, our neighbors, our spouse, our children, it doesn't matter. If anybody comes before him in our lives, then we cannot be his disciple. So what does that sound like? God comes first, you see? Same thing that the Ten Commandments said, God comes first. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's his point is, look, you need to understand, if you're going to follow me, I've got to be first in your life. Okay?
In the context of our terminology, collect less.
Yeah, people say that, but the reality is, it's not. Jesus isn't really trying to make a comparison here of saying, well, you know, you got to love me more. You know, or it's like, okay, let me see. You can love these people, but it's his point is, I need to be first. Okay, I need to be first in your life. Period. Nobody else can have that position in your life. If they do, even you can't have that position in your life. If it does, you can't be my disciple. Oh, yeah, anything. Anything, period. That's his point. Nothing else can be first in your life except me. Lorraine? Okay. Okay. All right. There's a terminology for that verse in Judaism, and I can't remember what it is that they call that particular verse, and they use it right. And I can't remember what the name of it is, but you're exactly right.
Well, it's kind of a realistic comparison to what Christ is after here. I think is, you know, you take the person that has studied and has decided, you know, well, you know, Scripture really tells me I need to, you know, become a Christian. I need to put Christ on a baptism. But my mother, or my aunt, or my uncle, or my father, they'll be mad at me if I do that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go, you know, maybe after they die. Okay, you've just done that position.
Exactly.
Which, okay.
Yeah.
When you start thinking that way, you said that my relationship with my earthly parents means more to me right now than my relationship with God.
Right. Exactly. And again, his whole point is nobody is allowed to have that position. Okay? Go over to Colossians chapter 1, and let me get somebody to read verses 15 through 18 for us. Let's look at what Paul has to say, his teaching from the Lord on this very same thing. And then we've got to focus and understand, and Paul brings this into perspective for us here, as to why this is so. Who's got it? Verses 15 through 18. Tom?
He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible. For his throne, for his dominion, for his principalities, for his powers. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things.
That in all things he might have first place. That's literally what it means, first place. Remember I told you back a few weeks ago we had a lesson, that's actually been a little bit longer than that. The easy way to remember this passage is what? The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Okay? And that's really what this is all about. You see, when the main thing loses its main spot, then we're in trouble. Okay? And so God, in the old law, when he gave the law to begin with, he established himself as preeminent. Now, here's a question that we have to settle in our hearts and minds. Okay? In order to keep this where it needs to be. Why does God deserve to be in that position? I mean, isn't that kind of selfish of God to demand that he be in the first place? And on what basis and what right does God have to demand that of us? Do what? Okay. Thank you. Because he created us. And isn't that what Paul is establishing here all over again? Through him, Everything was created. John says it this way, by him all things were created. Nothing that was created has been created without him. You see? All right, so when you begin to understand the concept that if he did not create us, we would not exist, okay? Then does that not give him the right to have first place? And that's just in and of itself. You don't even have to go to the second step, which is what we've been talking about, you know, before, in that you know, the law and everything was given as a response, in other words, what God has done, not just in creating, but in saving mankind, you see. In other words, we begin to realize when we focus on these things that were it not for God, first of all, we wouldn't exist, and secondly, if we did exist, we would be lost. Thank you. Because we as God's creation have absolutely no ability in and of ourselves to do anything to save ourselves. And when God gave the law, you see, in the context of that story, and that's why I keep coming back to this, that we make sure we get this in our brain and in our heart, that the law was given not just to give a bunch of rules and regulations, but it's given in the context of the story of the relationship that God wanted to have with His creation. And because He is the Creator, then He has the right to demand first place in our lives. Absolutely. Absolutely. See? Now, through the prophet Jeremiah, God would express this very same concept to the Israelite people when he talks about the fact that when he tells Jeremiah to use the pot, right? Y'all, okay? And the basic concept is that if you're a potter, you get a lump of clay, and what do you do with that lump of clay? Thank you. Whatever you want to. Why? Because the lump of clay is just that. It's a lump of clay. It can do nothing by itself. See? That lump of clay has no ability whatsoever to shape or form itself into anything unless some outside force is applied to it. It's going to remain a lump of clay. But the potter, through his or her skilled hands, takes that lump of clay and forms it and shapes it into what? What he or she wants it to be. Okay? And if that lump of clay in the forming of whatever the potter is forming becomes marred, then what does the potter do with it? What can he do with it? He can smash it and start all over again. And what can the clay do about it?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. See? Now, when you think about those instructions that God gave to the Israelite people through the prophet Jeremiah, you see, you begin to realize, I ain't nothing but a lump of clay. And that's what God wants us to understand. He is the potter, we're the clay. He's the one that gets to determine everything. Because without Him, all we'd be is a lump of clay. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, it's putting God over on the sidelines and, you know, let me go in, coach, and I'll handle this play, you know. When all the time God is saying, no, I'm in charge. So in this scale of values, what God established with the Israelites when he gave the law to begin with, and what Jesus reaffirms and what the Apostle Paul reaffirms is that God comes first. If anything else in our life comes first, then we're in trouble. Okay? The second part of this, the second most important thing is, and this ought to make you feel a little bit better than just simply realizing that we're nothing but a lump of clay, okay? But the second principle in the law is that people matter more than things. The law clearly establishes that. The fundamental principle of the law established very clearly the sanctity of human life. Okay? In other words, again, why is that so? Because we're talking about God's creation here. And it establishes to us how valuable God's creation is to Him. Okay? He is number one. But second on the totem pole are human beings. Okay? When you go back and you look at the story of creation and all the things that God created, what place did God put man? We're a little lower than the angels, but we are where concerning everything else? We're at the top of the food chain. Okay, literally. We're at the top of the food chain. Okay? In other words, all of the rest of the creation, God gave man, the Bible says, what?
Dominion
over it. You see? Why? Because we are special. Out of all of God's creation, human beings are special. Why are we special?
We have a living soul.
Okay, but express it.
God.
Do what?
God breathed into us.
Right, and we are created in His image. Thank you. You say, that's why this second principle is there. We are the only thing in all of God's creation that is created in His image. Say. And that's why God holds the sanctity of human life so highly. Okay? So in other words, when you look at the law, I'm trying to keep track of my time here. The laws concerning capital punishment within the law, for instance, okay? Those were reserved for two kinds of offenses. Okay, the first kind of offense was those which offended God Himself. Things like idolatry and blasphemy and so forth. Which basically reinforces what? Number one. Okay, remember the list of rules, you know, that says, you know, the rule number one, the customer is always right. Rule number two, if the customer is wrong, see rule number one. Okay? You see? This is kind of basically, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it goes back to rule number one, that God is first place. Okay? The other kinds of laws or violations of the law that carried a capital offense were those that threatened the stability of Israel as a covenant society. In other words, those laws are the ones that threatened the mission that God had set out for the Israelites. And what was that mission? Through you, all nations of the earth would be blessed. You see? In other words, they were things that were affecting other persons. Okay, so such that the stability of the community, of the society of Israel was affected. These are things like intentional murder, adultery, rebellious children, You say, we read within the law, if you have a rebellious child, what were they to do with them? Stone them to death. You say, thus you do what? You purge the evil from within the community. It's interesting that when you read those laws concerning those kinds of things, where were those actions supposed to be carried out? Outside the camp. You say, was that just by accident or what have you? Or no, it was important that they understood this behavior was so contrary to what God had in mind for His covenant people, and it so dramatically and drastically affected them that you are to get it out of the camp completely. You say, because of the severity. Those things that harmed the integrity of the family were capital offenses within the law. Offenses involving property did not carry a capital punishment. Things like stealing and so forth. And the reason for that is that no amount of property was worth a human life. See? Now, Jesus teaches this very same principle, okay, the very same concept over in Luke chapter 13, when he healed a woman on the Sabbath. Okay? And we talked a little bit about this previously. Okay? The conflict involved those, again, religious leaders who had rules. Right? Because of their interpretation and understanding of the laws concerning the Sabbath. And what you could or couldn't do on the Sabbath. Beginning in verse 10, let me get somebody to read down to verse 17 for us here, please.
On the Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and a woman was there who had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward and said to her, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." Then he put his hand on her, and immediately she straightened up and praised God. Indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue ruler said to the people, "There are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath." The Lord answered him, "You hypocrites, doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it out to give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what bound her?" When he said this, all his opponents were humiliated, but the people were delighted with all the wonderful things he was doing.
Now, it's interesting here that Jesus uses and refers to property, doesn't he? Okay? You know, you got an animal that needs to have water on the Sabbath. You take care of it and you water it, right? You see? Which is more valuable? Property or people? You see? That's what Jesus is establishing here. You take care of your property on the Sabbath, but as far as God is concerned, we need to take care of people. And we are allowed and should be taking care of people on the Sabbath. Especially since we're willing to take care of our property on the Sabbath. Why? Because people always come before property. You see? And so, you know, we find Jesus reinforcing this same principle in this scale of values. You know, how does this hierarchy work here? You see? We're just about out of time here. Let me run the last one here. Needs matter more than rights. Okay? The third principle here, important matter in the law, needs matter more than rights. In other words, runaway slaves were not to be returned to their masters, according to Deuteronomy 23. Women captured in war were not to be sexually abused. There were specific laws as to how they were to be treated. You see? And one would say, well, but wait a minute, we have a right because we captured them. They're slaves. We have a right to treat them this way. And God says, no, you don't. You see? Because needs matter more than rights. When you read the debtor's pledge over in Deuteronomy 24, that had to do with someone who borrows money and what you were to do for that person. If you take their cloak, you see, or their coat in pledge for the loan, the law required you to do what with it? Give it back to them at night so they don't freeze to death. You see, it's things like that. You have a right to collect that and to hold it, you see, for the debt. But because needs matter more than rights, the person's need for warmth at night in the cold supersedes your right to hold on to that particular thing. The gleanings of the harvest, they were to leave the edges of their fields, you see, unpicked. Why? For the poor, so that the needs of the poor would be taken care of. Certainly they had the right to go and clean all around the edges of their fields. It was their wheat, right? But God said the needs of the poor supersede your right to take these things. You see? So you leave those for the poor. Jesus, finally here, let me share this with you. Matthew 20, go and read this, beginning in verse 1. Jesus taught this very same principle when he gave the parable of the workers in the vineyard. Okay? Remember the parable, there were those workers that came in the morning and were hired, and he sent them out into the field to work, and all throughout the day, you know, there were more workers that were hired, and at the end of the day comes time to pay the workers, he starts paying who first? He starts paying the last who were hired first. And what does he give them? The same wage that he had promised to give the ones that were hired at the very beginning of the day. And those who were hired at the very beginning started grumbling and complaining, right? It's not fair. We have a right to be paid more because we've worked through the heat of the day. And his response is basically what? Needs supersede your rights. See, these people need these wages. And by the way, since I'm number one, I can do whatever I want to. It's my money, okay? And if I want to be generous to these people, then that's none of your business. You agreed to this when you started, so be quiet, okay? So you see, in that particular parable, what do we see happening? We see all three of these particular important matters in this scale of value in that one parable, don't we? You see? So when we're looking at the law, okay, and Jesus' interaction with the law and using and teaching based on the law and his application of it, we see how Jesus took those principles that he knew, that he grew up with, that he learned from the old law and applied them to the new law of Christ. Okay? All right. Thank you all very much. We're finished with here. Next week, we're going to begin the last section of this study, and that's going to be on Jesus and the prophets. Okay? Thank you all.